Hello, and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. I'm your usual host and mod, Enthusiasm Girl. Similar to the last episode's conversation on ABO, the conversation in this episode on villains and the way that certain fans perceive other fans' relationships to them is one that we've been promising now for quite a while. It's certainly a topic that we've gotten comments on when it's come up in the past on the show, and it was one I was really excited to finally dive into. So I hope that you enjoy the resulting conversation that you're about to hear. I'm joined by Lita and Z. All of us are villain lovers and sort of self-proclaimed trash people with problematic faves. And so we get into why we're interested in villains and in morally complex characters, and also what it means even to just use those terms, to call yourself a trash person or say you have a problematic fave, and how those terms are used within fandom. So this is one of those episodes that I think will be hopefully really enlightening to people who maybe have never understood the impulse to read or write about those kinds of characters, and it provides some insight both on why you would read them, but also why they're fun to write. So I hope that you do really enjoy it. So we have Lita with us today, who's been on the show plenty of times. Everyone should know her. Hi, Lita.
Hi.
And we have Z with us again.
Hello.
Hi. And today we are talking about villains. We're talking about what it's like to love that character who is, you know, evil, who some people might refer to as the problematic fave, right? Which we'll talk a little bit about. I assume the two of you are both here because you are villain lovers, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay. So we're going to do a little defense. Obviously, though, there are people out there who may feel otherwise, and we'll try to talk a little bit about why that is. I personally also love a villain. But the first question that I want to ask each of you, and we will start with you, Z, is why you love villains so much. So what's the appeal of them to you personally, and why do you find them more interesting to write about or read about than, you know, the heroes or a little perfect cinnamon roll?
I'm actually one of those people that I like to see the sort of redemption fix. Like, that's my favorite way to see the villains used and talked about. Not that I don't enjoy the occasional dark fic, of course, but I usually prefer the redemption stories. So I just like seeing, you know, that personality or that situation changed and sort of, you know, them encountering other characters who have this sort of opposite view of things and having to deal with it and maybe eventually changing their ways. I just think it's fun to see.
Okay, so you're on the redemption side, right? You're on the let's bring them over to the hero side kind of thing.
Yes.
And what about you, Lita? Why do you think that villains are more interesting sometimes than the heroes?
I think that a lot of the times the villains' motivations are really interesting. Like, if you think about, if you believe that all people are born innocent, then it's really interesting to think about what turned a person into a villain, and kind of, you know, what would it take for one of the heroes to become a villain? And also that I think if you don't have good villains, the heroes are not very interesting either. So I think I'm really only interested in heroes and their relationship to the villains.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think that that's actually true of a lot of the really great media, is that a hero is only as interesting as the villain, right? If you think about, I know with Marvel, you know, some of the better movies are the ones with stronger villains, as opposed to ones where the villain is maybe not so interesting and kind of one-dimensional. And I think part of, you know, that's the appeal of Loki for people, and that's part of why Thor was so interesting, is when you have a villain who's maybe a little more muddled in their motivation, where they could maybe be redeemed, or they could be evil. You have that choice presented to you, and the villain has some dimension and some depth. I think it just gives people a little more to run off of, right? A little more to go with.
Right. And there's that saying about, like, I don't know what exactly it is, something like every villain is the hero of their own story. So I think that's an interesting aspect, too, is how they don't necessarily believe themselves to be a villain.
Yeah, I think that the best villains, that's absolutely true of. They're the ones who 100% buy their own bullshit.
Yeah. Like, in Deep Space Nine, Gul Dukat, I think, was a great villain who's like that. Like, he thinks he's the best and is doing the best thing for everybody all the time. And, like, I don't know if you guys watch Deep Space Nine, but, you know, he believes that by occupying Bajor, the Cardassians are really saving everybody when, in fact, they're putting people into labor camps and killing them. So I think that was that made him a really good villain, was that he believed he was the good guy.
Yeah, and I think when we're talking about Star Trek too, right, you look at the best Star Trek villains, the ones people remember, and, you know, ones like Khan or villains like the Borg on Star Trek.
Their motivations
are fairly simple, but they believe in what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? I was going to ask you guys, you know, and you brought it up already, Lita, but some of your favorite villains for that reason, right? The ones who you love to write about, you love to read about. So you said Gul Dukat, Lita. Are there other villains who stand out to you as particularly just really great to read and write about?
So my favorite villain is probably Kate Argent from Teen Wolf, who is one of the most hated villains by fandom. But she was really interesting to me in that we never really got into her backstory of why she is the way she is, but it's kind of suggested vaguely that her father may have had some influence and treated her in a certain way at a young age, and she's ended up becoming this kind of unapologetic villain who still believes what she's doing is right. So she could murder an entire house full of people, you know, parents and children and everybody, but because they were werewolves, she must be the hero and she's saving people by doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because I don't watch Teen Wolf, but it sounds like that's somebody who kind of, it would be somewhat scenery chewing and somebody fans could kind of dig into as a character, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of Supernatural, where it's like if you picked up Sam and Dean and then stuck them into a story that was from the perspective of the werewolves, then clearly Sam and Dean are the villains, right? So it's that same kind of thing, as Teen Wolf is about the werewolves. So then the hunters, and Kate Argent is a hunter, she is therefore a villain because she's hunting werewolves. Because we know from, you know, the fact that the hero is a werewolf, that werewolves aren't actually all evil animals. But she doesn't know that.
Right. Okay. And Z, we'll come over to you. I mean, who are some of the villains who stand out in your mind in fandom who you personally really love to read and write about? I mean, you said you like them from the perspective of being redeemed. So for you, it might be a little different of what you're looking for from a villain, right?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, I've kind of bounced around with villains for the most part. I mean, like, I used to really enjoy Bleach, so Grimmjow was one of my favorites from that. But right now I'm mostly focused on Loki, obviously, and Draco Malfoy, who is by far, I love Draco Malfoy. He's like my favorite thing ever. And it's so much fun with him to, you know, sort of explore the redemption thing, because you get to think about how he has this father who's a Death Eater, you know, and so he sort of was just dragged into it, and he had choices and he made the wrong decisions sometimes. But you also see in points in the book and the movie that he actually could be redeemed, because, you know, like when he's sent to kill Dumbledore, he hesitates, he puts down his wand kind of thing. So he has that level of possibility that I really enjoy in a villain. And the same thing with Loki, of course, in the Avengers, they show the mind control with the staff and stuff like that. And the fact that Loki's got blue eyes in that movie, and a lot of people were like, oh, that means he's under the control of the staff kind of thing. And so that made him really appeal to me as well.
Do you think that there are, from the perspective of someone who wants to redeem a villain rather than kind of explore the actual villainy, do you think that there are some villains who are better suited to that than others? Because the couple I'm thinking of in my head are villains like Grant Ward in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Or Wilson Fisk in Daredevil. Or, I mean, some of what I understand about Hannibal, that there are certain villains who don't seem to have that ability to be redeemed. Like, they have qualities that you can admire. They clearly believe in what they're doing. There are elements of them that, you know, you kind of can still love to hate them. But when it comes to saying these people don't know right from wrong, or these people can have their morality shifted, there's a difference between a character who knows that they are evil and decides to fully embrace that evil versus a character who maybe you could argue was being, you know, more manipulated or grew up that way or has kind of an out for their villainy.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good way to put it, is that, you know, there are some characters that are just a little less, I guess, ready for that sort of change in their lives. And you bringing up Wilson Fisk actually makes me think of that. For me, I like Fisk. I like the character of Fisk. I don't necessarily seek him out in stories, but I like reading his influence on other characters, you know. But for me, he's kind of more of an innocent evil, if that makes any sense, because he's one of those people who believes that what he's doing is for the good of everyone. And so he's the bad guy, like you said earlier, Lita, but he doesn't really, he thinks he's doing the right thing. So it's a different kind of evil for me. And I like that sort of stance on things. But yeah, I mean, there are certain characters who I can't see being redeemed, like Fisk is one of them, just because of his beliefs. And this is maybe a little odd, but Governor Kodos from the old Star Trek series, the guy who was the governor of Tarsis IV when the whole fungus thing was going around, he's not a big villain, but because of what he did, he made such an impact on Kirk's life. And he was doing things for what he thought was the right reason in the beginning, but then it turned into this massive slaughter that just made him into this horrible person.
The reason I was asking, too, is because I think... I mean, I had wanted to ask you guys about the couple of different subsets of fans and how they interact with villains. Mm-hmm. And I think when we talk about, you know, the idea of someone being problematic or of people being upset that people are writing about villains, a lot of the time what they're mad about is people who are redeeming villains. It's people who are overlooking these horrendous moral things that characters have done to kind of give them a forgiveness that fans don't feel that they're worthy of. And I think that, you know, with Grant Ward, that's one to me that, even though I agree with fans' ability to kind of, you know, write whatever they want and write villains however they want, when you start to see fans who take a character like Grant Ward or Wilson Fisk or, you know, Kilgrave and Jessica Jones, and they are writing them almost into kind of cinnamon rolls, complete forgiveness to what they've done, complete justification for what they've done, I think that certain aspects of that really do rub people the wrong way. So I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on that, if you think that there's a way that fans can go too far in redeeming certain villains. And Z, we'll start with you, and then we'll let Lita chime in on this.
Definitely, and I think that goes back to the whole, you know, certain characters being more proper for that sort of redemption fic, you know, like you said, Fisk, I mean, or Kilgrave even, you brought up Kilgrave, I totally forgot about him for the most part. I could never see him getting redeemed. He's just such an evil character. He's got no morals. I mean, he basically tortures people for fun, and children and women, he doesn't care. And if somebody attempted to, you know, redeem him, I don't think I could handle that. It just, it doesn't make sense to me.
And Lita, what do you think about that kind of writing?
I think the problem isn't really necessarily with the redemption. Like, I'm okay with stories where a villain sees the error of their ways and then works to counteract that. And it's stuff like, you know, like in the Avengers movie where Natasha says, I've got red in my ledger, and now she's going to be a hero to erase, to, you know, counteract the bad things she had previously done. I think that kind of thing is fine with me. The problem I have is when fanfic doesn't do the effort of the redemption and just jumps in where the villain's already been redeemed, and all of a sudden it's like Thor and Loki are shopping for bedroom furniture or something like that, where it's like, this doesn't make sense. Like, you can't just start there. You can, right? Because it's fanfic, because people can write whatever they want. But I feel like it's harder to buy when, what upsets me in fandom is when I see a villain getting a lot of fluffy domestic fic written about them that doesn't put any effort into explaining why all of a sudden they're in fluffy and domestic fic when previously they were a mass murderer.
For me, I think it goes into, like you said, it's the effort that's put in to erase that history, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also, for me personally, I'm usually struck by either a lack of guilt on the part of this person about what they did, which is something that's needed for redemption, really,
right?
And acknowledgement that you've killed people. And also, what gets me, and it's just a matter of it seeming really out of character, is forgiveness on the part of other characters.
Yeah, like I think I'm sorry to go back to Deep Space Nine, because I think this is a good example. Like, Gul Dukat is not, to me, a character who can be redeemed. Like, yes, he believes what he's doing is right, and he believes that to the end, even though he is clearly, clearly a villain. And when it comes to shipping, I will admit that I ship Dukat and Kira, which is a terrible, horrible, like, bad relationship, and it should not be a good thing between them. It could not be. She would never forgive him in a million years for all the horrible things he did. And I like to read fic about that because I like to read about horrible things. But I know there are people out there who ship them without that and, like, want them to be, like, happy together and him to be redeemed and with her. And I just cannot see that ever happening.
Yeah, I get what you mean, right? I'm okay, I think, with a villain themselves being redeemed in their own mind, right? So a character like Loki or a character like Hannibal, if they feel guilt and they want to try and redeem themselves, that's fine if you want to put them through the paces of that. Do I think that the other characters are ever going to forget certain things that had been done? Well, no, right? So to me, where a fic that's trying to redeem Loki loses me is when all the other Avengers are suddenly looking out for Loki and have his back. Because to me, there's not going to be a trust there, or it's going to take a lot of effort on the part of the writer to get me to where I believe that. And I think that, yeah, with Gul Dukat, you're absolutely right. Whether, you know, Gul Dukat does things to try to make up for the killing of millions of Bajorans, there is no scenario where Kira gives him a hug, even.
Right.
Right? Like, that's just not a scenario that would ever happen. And so it's always going to seem out of character.
She's never going to feel bad for him. Even when she does kind of feel bad for him, she doesn't really feel bad for him.
Right. Z, what do you think about that aspect of redeeming a villain?
Actually, I mean, I can agree. I definitely don't think that everybody would just suddenly go, oh, you're forgiven because you're trying to make things better in your life. But I've also read a couple of fics where, like, the example that jumps out to me is, like, Loki getting tortured or imprisoned or something nasty like that, because a lot of people equate Asgard back to, like, old medieval times where torture was totally cool. And, you know, you could, if somebody did something horrible, it was totally fine to, you know, whip them a couple of times or whatever. And so fics where Thor, like, rescues Loki and brings him to Earth because he doesn't want him to go through that. And Tony is one of those people who is like, oh, my God, torture. I don't like this. Let's not do this. You know, he doesn't necessarily forgive Loki, but because he's been through that, he sort of, you know, is able to understand what Loki's been through. And even though he doesn't forgive him, he can still want to protect him, if that makes any sense. You know, the one that comes to mind is a story called Poetic Justice. It basically follows exactly what I just said. Thor saves Loki from torture and all that good stuff, and Tony basically says, yes, he did wrong, he killed people, he did bad things, but don't do this to him, keep him here, we'll imprison him, we'll keep an eye on him, but stop the torturing, that's not cool. And I really like that story.
Yeah, Poetic Justice is one of those ones that's, you know, epic and a million words long in Avengers fandom, and it is one of those Loki stories. And this is particular to Loki, but some villains attract it more than others. The kind of, they don't have to work as hard for redemption because either they were manipulated or there are outstanding factors here that make the other characters try and understand more than they normally would.
Exactly.
Right? I think that when you mentioned Draco Malfoy, I think that's something that's true of him as well, right? Is because of the kind of childhood he had, I think it's natural for writers to kind of want to say, look, there could be a good person in there. This is someone who is distorted by a particular set of parents or a particular childhood. And Loki has that in common with Draco, right? Where this is a character who maybe if you did just give them some unconditional love, or if you did just give them the right circumstances, they were not necessarily built to be a villain, right? They're making the best out of the circumstances they're in.
In the case of Draco, like I said, there's examples in the book and the movies like that just show him trying to make that choice, like the fact that he doesn't tell the Death Eaters that Harry is there, or the way that he hesitates when he's the one that's supposed to kill Dumbledore. He shows those little bits of there might be good in him. He just needs that other chance and that other choice.
I think that's kind of where there's a little bit of a difference, because I do feel like in the Harry Potter books, the canonical intent was for Draco Malfoy to be a redeemable person, because like you said, there's all those examples. But I feel like from what I recall of the Thor movies, every time Loki has some kind of chance for redemption or something, he just goes and murders a bunch of people. So it doesn't seem like he's as likely to be redeemable to me personally. I mean, I know everyone has their own opinions there, but Draco seems like he is set up canonically to be redeemed.
I think, yeah, if you're going against the canonical kind of intent of the creators, I think it's a lot harder to be able to redeem that villain. Because to me, Kilgrave, there are attempts that the show makes where sometimes it seems like Jessica Jones as a show is kind of saying, look, we know that you want to like this guy. He's played by David Tennant. You know, you guys are going to go write love narratives about him and Jessica. We get that you're going to do that. So we're going to hint at the idea that maybe, hey, why couldn't this guy be redeemed? And then we're really going to canonically give you the answer of no.
Exactly.
No, no, no.
Well, what was that episode? I can't even remember the name of the episode. It's been so long since I've seen it now. But the one where they really went into, you know, who he was and what he went through and all this stuff. At the end of that episode, I was like, oh, I kind of feel bad for Kilgrave. You know, like, I was sort of starting to be like, okay, I might like this guy. And then they showed, you know, him do something else bad. I can't remember what it was now. And it was like, well, oh, yep, nope, I hate you again.
to me, it was, so he gives Jessica, you know, the sob speech about his parents, right?
Yeah.
Oh, poor me, I was experimented on.
That was it.
And then he tells, you know, oh, it was my childhood. Because that's a fan thing, to blame the parents in the childhood and give them an out. And then it literally, his parents show up and it's like, no, he's a liar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a straight up liar. And then later on, she even considers this idea of, I could make him good. Well, maybe he just needs my influence. And if I'm on his ass and I'm with him, let's go make Kilgrave kind of a hero. Well, he could use his powers for good, right?
And she brings his parents in. And then, you know, it was like that moment where I was like, oh, this might be good. And then he stabbed his mother.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, everybody.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's, if you're listening to the show, I assume you kind of know that we're going to talk about, you know, some fandom stuff. But the other thing to me was, again, when she tries to make him good. So when she walks him through the paces of being the hero, and in any other, I think, story, he would walk away from the people he saved being like, huh, I saved some people. I feel pretty good. And she'd be like, see, you can feel like this all the time. When he saved those people, he walked out and he was like, so does this make you happy? I only care about making you happy, right? I'd murder those second in a heartbeat if it made you happy otherwise. Like, there was literally no conscience displayed. Right? So I think when you then try and redeem that to me is a lot harder. And I feel the same way about Grant Ward. To me, the show did the same thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hung a lot of stories on, let's give you a little more about Grant's backstory and make you feel like, hey, maybe this guy's not so bad. No, now he's going to turn around and prove to you that he's the asshole, right?
I feel like this discussion would be remiss if nobody mentions Kylo Ren, mm-hmm. who is the, you know, current trendy fandom villain who you either hate or love, it seems to be the case.
And again, he has a similar pivotal moment, which is where I think he loses.
Yep. The redeemable moment where he then does not do the redeemable thing.
Right. And he does instead this unforgivable thing.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to no matter what else he does, no matter how much else you redeem him, that one thing he did is so horrendously bad that none of the other characters are ever going to be able to not think about that when they talk to him. I think that Kylo Ren is one where that's what it comes down to, is a lot of people very strongly feel like, no, they gave him the redeemable moment. He did not take it. So the canon does not want you to take it either, right? And there is a lot of just hate for people who love Kylo Ren out there. For a variety of reasons, but it exists, right? Some people really, really respond extremely passionately in the anti-camp of redeeming villains. So yeah, I mean, it's a contentious thing for a lot of people of how far you can take that when you're redeeming someone. On the other hand, though, another thing I wanted to make sure that we definitely take some time to talk about is, Lita, you mentioned it, you don't really like the redemption stuff. You like the horrible wrong bad stuff.
Yep.
So do you want to list some examples of the kind of horrible wrong bad that we're talking about? I mean, you mentioned, I think, a particular you know, ship that you had, that right. Kira and Gul Dukat that you know is wrong. Are yeah. there other types of things that you think of that you know people are going to be like, why do you like that?
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to go back to Teen Wolf because my Teen Wolf OTP is Derek and Kate. And that basically the, for those who don't know Teen Wolf, I'm going to only spoil season one here. The plot is that Derek, when he was a teenager, maybe 15 or so, Kate was an adult and she seduced him in order to get an in to his werewolf family and then used him to set fire to his house and burn, lock his entire family inside and kill them all. And only Derek and his sister, as far as we know in season one, only Derek and his sister escaped. There's other junk that happens later. But so their entire story is that she seduced him when he was a teenager and she was an adult and used him to kill his family. And I love that relationship. That is my favorite. That is everything I want to read about Teen Wolf because partially because she is such a great villain. She's just really well done. She's really confident and she's really like when she first shows up for the first time, Teen Wolf likes to do this thing where they start something like a horror movie trope and then they kind of twist it. So when she first shows up, you see there's this blonde woman driving in a car, singing along to her radio, and then all of a sudden she hears this noise like, oh my God, what was that? And then she gets out of the car with a rifle and like goes, come on, shoots at the werewolf that it was. But so she's just like really powerful. And then meanwhile, Derek, who is my favorite, he's very affected. He's clearly very, very affected by what she did to him. And I think that's part of his story is the gradual becoming of a hero, having to overcome the fact that he is starting out by repeating all of the bad things that Kate did to him. There's part in season two where he then takes advantage of some teenagers in a way that is similar to the way that Kate took advantage of him. And I just find that whole dynamic really fascinating, and I love to read about it. But meanwhile, if you look at the vast majority of Teen Wolf fandom, everybody hates Kate because she was so terrible to Derek. And that's like everything. Everyone says, oh, they should kill her. I hate her. Get rid of her. She was terrible. How dare she hurt Derek?
Yeah, the instinct to kind of protect your favorite character. Right. That actually, it's so funny that you said that that's all you want in Teen Wolf fandom, because you and I are similar in that respect, Lita. You're describing that relationship and I'm like, oh, I want that. That sounds like a crazy relationship. That sounds just so messed up, which is just also
it's really
my jam.
Messed up. I mean, that's like the whole thing about the villain. It's like she did terrible, terrible things. And that's why she's so interesting. And the terrible things she did to him are what make him interesting. He would not be nearly as interesting if she did not have this dynamic with him, especially because when she shows up, you know, in the show, he's now an adult and she sees him again when she's grown and he's grown and she hasn't seen him in years. And she has this great line about this one grew up in all the right places, and she's very dehumanizing toward him. And you know, that's one of my, you know, dehumanization is one of my favorite kinks. So I'm really into it.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, there are people as well who, from a wrong bad perspective, when you're talking about dehumanization, we've brought it up a few times on the show, and it's, you know, it's just me being the mod that it comes up so much. But Bucky Barnes and the whole Hydra trash party phenomenon and the Marvel side of things, I feel like even bringing up the idea of Bucky as a villain will make a certain subset of Marvel fans really angry that I use the words villain and Bucky Barnes in the same sentence. But in, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier, he is. And there's an element of him as a villain that people have latched onto with Hydra Trash Party, where they love to put him in the same category as Rumlow and as, you know, Alexander Pierce, and they love to make him manipulated. They love to make him, you know, definitely along for their ride, as opposed to a, you know, more active participant in the villainy. But there are dark fics that also do make him an out-and-out villain, and I find that fascinating, that on the one hand, you can have so many Marvel fans who are obsessed with turning Bucky Barnes into this sympathetic, poor, abused, you know, fluffy bunny who could do no wrong in his life, who was entirely manipulated by Hydra, who is the great love of Steve's life, and then you have this other subset of fans who are just like, I could care less, just give me the dehumanization. Just give me the him working for Pierce. You know, just give me the dichotomy of this guy whose head is a bag of marbles from all of the years of being frozen and unfrozen and what he must have gone through. So I think, again, it's that psychological thing of really thinking about when a person goes through that much, how do they get to the point of villainy versus heroism, right?
Yeah, and that's also on that same topic. That's one of my favorite types of MCU fics, is the ones where Steve is the Winter Soldier, or Natasha is the Winter Soldier, or Peggy Carter is the Winter Soldier, like all those different AUs where one of the other heroes becomes the villain.
Yeah, especially when they have the potential for it, right? A really good dark AU can just bring psychologically something out of the canon where it really makes you reconsider. Again, like you said, right? A villain always thinks they're the hero of their own story. So when you can take a hero and a character who everybody loves and you can say, no, 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 but what if they're the villain? I find that really, really interesting. When I came into Kingsman fandom after seeing the movie Kingsman, I was just delighted and overjoyed by the fact that fandom had just decided, for the most part, that Colin Firth's character, Harry, was someone who was made for a dark AU, or someone who was a villain, right? Like, fandom seemed to just kind of be like, no, there's no way we buy necessarily this guy as fully a hero. We want him to save Eggsy, but we're not necessarily still buying that he's behaving heroically. So you got these AUs that wrote him as, you know, a million times darker than he is in the movie, which was just so fun to me, to just embrace that side of this guy who, yeah, he claims to be the hero, but you also see him massacre a church full of people, which, you know, fun times for me.
The funny part about dark AUs and stuff, at least for me, is that when I read dark AUs, I actually prefer to see ones where the hero is the reason that it's a dark AU. It's not necessarily a villain going darker or exploring the darkness of the villain. I like to see the heroes turn into villains, because that's fun too. Like, I've read a couple of really fun ones with Peter Parker, who either he gets further mutated and so he just goes on this killing spree or something like that, or he takes the revenge too far and, you know, ends up killing the guy that shot Uncle Ben, and so he just, you know, is like, oh, well, this is how I can save people. And, you know, it's so much fun to watch someone who in canon has that, you know, rigid morality, especially Spider-Man in this case, who is very intent on, he stands up for the little guy, he is a hero, he doesn't hurt people, you know, he doesn't kill people, at least. And, you know, to see him taken to that darkness of, this is how I should be doing this, and pulled into that sort of thing, it's so fascinating and so much fun for me.
I also think there's just something that's kind of a fun outlet, and sometimes I think other fans who don't need that outlet don't realize it, but if you've got things that you're trying to work out, you know, impulses, if you're going through a depression, or if you just find yourself sympathizing with certain qualities of the villain and you kind of don't like that you are, it can sometimes be really cathartic and fun to just say, let's write a villain as a villain and see how far we can take this, right? I have always maintained that, you know, I know when Jessica Jones came out, back at our Daredevil episode, we even talked about this, the worry that there was going to be a whole segment of fans who were going to want to redeem Kilgrave, right? And how upset that made people. And then when you go and look at, you know, a lot of the fic that's now in that pairing tag, a lot of it is actually really dark, where it's still fans who love that relationship and dynamic, and it's still fans who want to write about it and want to write smut about it, and there's something kind of wrong about that. But a lot of it is fully acknowledging Kilgrave is a character who is everybody's worst id. You know, no conscience, doesn't care, uses mind control in the worst way. So I think that when people write that stuff, It's stuff you could never think about in real life, right? Like, it's taking your own worst impulses or your own self-hatred, that there's an element of that character that you watched and said, you know, I would probably like that guy.
Part of it also is that, like, when you're using the villain to do, like, you take the villain and make them extra villainous in a fic, it's usually also womp for the hero. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the appeal of those kind of fics is how far can we push this hero until they break? Or are they going to break? Are they not going to break? Or, you know, how bad does it have to get in order for them to have some change in their behavior or make the hero into a villain or that sort of thing? It's like the
I love that sort of stuff. I mean, that's why I love the heck out of the Master in Doctor Who. I mean, because he pushes so many of the Doctor's buttons, and it's just, it's so much fun to see their dynamic and how people take it and twist it, and it's so much fun.
So it's like that part in Supernatural in some early-ish season, I don't remember where exactly, where Dean goes to hell and spends, I don't know, whatever, in hell time, like 40 years or something, it's refusing years, to torture people. And then he finally gives in and starts torturing people and becomes, I mean, are there bad guys in hell? I don't know. But he becomes the torturer instead of the torturee. And that is my favorite type of Dean Winchester.
And see, that comes back into play later on in the series with the Dean Men, and that is why it's so much fun for mm-hmm. me, because when he comes around, it's like you kind of get a flashback to that season where it's like Dean's thinking about all those terrible things he did, but now because he's a demon, he's like, oh, well.
But they try to redeem him, and like when he comes back from hell and he's trying to be good, and then there's that part where they need to get information from that guy, right?
Alistair.
You know who I mean? Alistair, yeah. And so they make Dean torture him. Mm-hmm. And Dean has this line where he's like, if I walk in that door, you're not going to like who walks back out of it. And that was so great.
All right. So what I wanted to also get into a little bit is the idea that you hear it a lot more sometimes in kind of talking about real people as well. It's kind of applied to both fictional and real celebrities, because you can have a problematic fave in the real world, right? However, it's interesting to me to think about what that term kind of connotes now in fandom, what it means to people in fandom to say that your fave is problematic, because I am a firm believer that there's really no character who you can have who people couldn't find some reason to call a problematic fave. Like, maybe Steve Rogers, maybe like the purest of heroes, you don't have to apply that label to. But I feel like there's a case that could be made for villainous moments or things that they did that were kind of on the wrong side of that moral gray for a lot of characters. And sometimes the way I see it being applied is in the way of, you shouldn't like that character, right? There's something wrong with you for liking that character. I see it applied as a kind of a judgment thing or as a reclaiming thing, and I don't think that it's necessarily something people should feel the need to reclaim. Like, if you like a character, you like a character, right? It implies that you feel bad about it or that you should. So, Lita, how do you kind of feel about the way that that sometimes gets applied when people are talking about loving villains or who they love as a character in fandom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on that one. I don't really like the term in general, because everybody is problematic. Like, I would challenge you to find any character anywhere who there's not somebody out there who has a problem with them. I've seen here, I mean, I'm sure somebody has a problem with Steve Rogers. There's going to be one. I don't know what it is. People's problem is they didn't like the way he was mean to Tony in Avengers. Or, you know, like, certainly people talked about that after the first Avengers movie. But because everyone is problematic, I think usually the term problematic gets applied more to like racism and sexism and homophobia and those kind of things that we in general refer to as problematic things. So like if a celebrity, you know, says something negative about a person of color, and it's a white celebrity who says that, then that person is problematic, which, I mean, I'm problematic too. Everybody's problematic. So I don't know that it's very useful to use that term. I feel like a lot of the time when somebody is going out and saying, hey, this person's my problematic fave, I think really what they're doing is saying, hey guys, I know this person's not perfect. Don't come yell at me about I shouldn't like them because they're not perfect. So I'm just going to tell you up front, they're my problematic fave, which means I know they have their failings, but I like them anyway.
Yeah, I think it's I don't object to the use of the word problematic when you're talking about an issue. I think when you apply it to a person, it becomes a different type of a thing, right? Because like you said, I don't think there's such a thing as a non-problematic person. I could talk to anybody for 20 minutes and find you one thing that they've said or that they think that I'm going to say, ooh, yeah, that's problematic. And that's a judgment call even on my part, right, as to what I deem problematic or not. So you're right. I think it's usually just used as a self-justification thing because people are worried that people are going to judge them or believe that they believe this thing a character believes if they don't use that qualifier.
It's like how we talk about, like, I'm such trash for shipping this. It's like, you know, the thing you're shipping would not be a good thing in real life. And you acknowledge that and you ship it anyway, and that's fine. But I feel like a lot of times when people talk about having those kind of ships, they specifically call them trash ships or something like that, so that everyone else who's following you on Tumblr or reading your Twitter or whatever knows that you know that it's not a shining example of what everyone should aspire to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people should just give people the benefit of the doubt about that. Like, I feel like that's...
Maybe they should, but I don't think they do.
No, I don't difficult. Think that they do. What do you think about the way that term is used, Z?
I'm kind of with Lita on that. It's, you know, everybody's going to have problems. Nobody's perfect. It's, you can't expect a character to be perfect either. And, you know, I've actually, interestingly enough, I haven't seen the term applied a lot to characters. As somebody from the Transformers fandom, I've seen it mostly applied to ships, specifically Megatron and Starscream, because in the show and comics and all that, their relationship is very portrayed as an abusive one. And so anybody who likes them shipped together must automatically be somebody who's okay with domestic abuse or rape or things like that. And, you know, it's one of those things that I really enjoy that ship. And so I suppose it is a problematic fave, but I'm fully aware it's an abuse relationship. I don't care. It's fun.
Well, and that's the thing is, I think when we're talking about whether or not villains can be redeemed or not, I think a lot of the time the key element of that is a ship, right? Like, you're either redeeming them to put them in a ship or you're not redeeming them to make them in a ship, right? So, like, most fics that I have read that have redeemed Loki, they've redeemed Loki so that you're not angry that he's with Tony and Tony can still be a hero and be with Loki. Like, you're redeeming them with the purpose of love, or you're having love in some way redeem them. And so I think that I could see why the problematic fave thing would apply more to ships. Now, I do think, again, that that's really presumptive on the part of people seeing a particular ship. Again, maybe we should just be giving people the benefit of the doubt. If I see that it's a Kilgrave and Jessica fic, my assumption is this person understands and has seen the show. Ergo, they understand the problems with this ship. So if they're writing something redemptive, that's none of my business. But I'm going to assume, you know, that they understand that they're redeeming somebody and it's a wrong, bad kind of a redemption to do. I'm going to assume that they don't aspire to be with somebody like Kilgrave, that they're writing it for other reasons, right? But again, it's presumptive of you thinking you know what's in the person's head who's shipping that ship and writing that thing.
I think it depends also on, like, what kind of fic you like to read. So, like, I like to read a lot of, like, if I'm reading smutty fanfic, it's going to be, like, BDSM, lots of, like, power differentials and that kind of stuff is what I like to read about. And the relationships where there is a big power imbalance and someone's taking advantage of somebody else, I like them for that reason. But I know a lot of people don't want to read about that kind of stuff and aren't into that kind of thing. And if you want to read just something like really vanilla and cutesy, except the person you want to read it about is a villain, then I think you tend to end up writing some fic that either redeems them or puts them in an AU where they're not a villain in order to be able to write that more fluffy kind of fanfic about them.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, right? Like, you've got to do other things to get to that place with that ship.
Yeah, like when I was talking about Derek and Kate, this is definitely a problematic ship. She was an adult who took an advantage of a teenager and murdered his family. Clearly, that is not a good thing to do in real life. Clearly, I don't approve of that, but I love this ship. But a lot of fandom will say, oh, you ship that, you must be a pedophile, which doesn't doesn't, you know, is completely untrue. But that's kind of like what people say about it, like the same thing about it, an abusive ship, and they say, oh, you must support domestic violence. It's like, no, that's not true. But
yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of people in fandom who, there seems to be some subsets of fandom who have a hard time understanding the separation of what you like from who you are.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there are some fans out there where who they like, what they like is who they are, right? Like if your identity is fully built and you're all in of I'm gonna live my life like this character because I love this character, or if that's your personality, I could see how you could look at other fans and you could say, oh my god, I could never put Kilgrave on my wall and be Kilgrave and want to walk around, and all the characters I love are characters I want to be. So ergo, if somebody's writing Kilgrave fic and they say they love Kilgrave, they must want to be Kilgrave, right? Like I can see how some fans can misunderstand that, but at the same time, like, it should be kind of obvious that that's not the case. Like, there's not a million psychopaths in fandom.
Hopefully not.
Well, maybe there are.
maybe, but, like, I really think that the proportion of people who have any ill intent towards anybody, who support domestic abuse or support rape or support half of the stuff that fandom really, really loves writing about, it's just not the case that that's true, right? So I find it just strange that we're always having to qualify ourselves with, like, oh, everybody, before I come into this room and I wear this t-shirt that professes my love for this ship, I need to loudly announce to everybody that I'm garbage and that this is problematic and I know it is, and please don't come up to me, and please don't think that I like domestic abuse, and please don't think that I'm racist because it's white people. And you feel like you have to qualify it 8 ways from Sunday, right? Or you're going to get called something by somebody and you're going to become the one who's now problematic.
It can start right? A lot of hate. And it's so silly to me that people are that immature, I guess. And for me, that really ties to it as the maturity level. Because as you get older, you realize that, you know, people are going to like things. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're, oh, I like this thing, therefore it's my entire life. And so, I don't know. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, it's a tough separation sometimes for people to kind of conceive of, I think.
And there's also, there are also people out there who don't necessarily, I mean, especially it's possible there may be some younger fans who maybe don't have great role models in their real life of heroes or healthy relationships or things like that, and are turning to media for that and might not understand that a relationship is an unhealthy relationship. Like, I know there's a lot of talk about this, like with Twilight, about, you know, oh, all these teenage girls are reading this and they want to have a relationship like this, but really it's the relationship between, I don't even remember their names, I'm sorry, Edward and Bella. So just that is not really a healthy relationship, and it's not really something you should aspire to. And I think for older fans, we kind of understand that already, but if you're younger and maybe have not been exposed to as many real life relationship scenarios, maybe you don't quite understand that. And I think there's kind of this push of, well, we better make sure that the younger fans understand that this is a problem, so we need to tell everybody this is a problem just in case they don't already know.
I think it's mischaracterizing, too, to say that that's just younger fans, because I think there are older
that's
fans
true.
Who are also immature. I do.
That is true, too.
And that's why I said maturity level and not age.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there are older fans who don't understand it either, right? But at the same time, what I think that comes down to is how much is fan fiction going to simply also be a reflection of the media and the stories that it's interpreting? So is it really the responsibility of the fan fiction world to take these stories that are in and of themselves problematic, that are laden with this baggage of the culture we live in and all of the sexism and homophobia and racism and all of those things that exist in the culture? How much of a responsibility do we have in fan fiction? As much as we say that it's transformative and meant to be corrective, to kind of really be the ones to take that on and protect everybody from the messages of the story. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're writing, as you said in Teen Wolf, that relationship between Kate and Derek, well, that's from the canon.
Yeah, it is.
You're loving a thing from the canon. So why should you be the one to take that on yourself and have to say to everybody, this is a trash pairing, I should feel bad about this, you should feel bad about this, we should all feel bad about this. You're taking that from the canon, right? Like, that's not on you. You're not the one who introduced those ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do think we, I mean, to be fair, like, I don't think everyone needs to qualify their preferences in any sort of way. I do think that we should examine our own preferences and think about, you know, why we like these things. So I don't want people to think, like, you know, that we're against that sort of criticism of your own preferences.
No, and I'm, you know, I've said on the show before, I mean, I'm not a person who believes that we have no responsibility, right? Like, mm-hmm. I said, fan fiction is meant to be transformative and somewhat corrective. That's why we, to a degree, have so much slash within the fan fiction community, right? It's meant to do the things that the mainstream canon is not doing. But at the same time, because those stories that it's taking and interpreting come with that baggage is to a degree also still going to be there. It's very hard to separate that out. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with saying that you like something and just leaving it at that, right? And I don't think that every single individual in fandom needs to also constantly be thinking about the giant responsibility that they shoulder to make sure that somebody reading their story understands fully that it's not what they really believe, that it's not something they should aspire to, that it, you understand all of the stuff at play in it. Like, I think that kind of sucks all the kind of fun and energy out of writing when you have to be constantly worrying about those types of perceptions. And again, it, to me, it's just an issue of the benefit of the doubt, right? Like, I have to assume that my readers are coming for whatever I'm selling, right? And are coming in and being able to give me the benefit of the doubt of, hey, this person is writing this, and it's not necessarily what they believe. They're writing it because they want to explore something interesting, or they have personal demons that they need to work out, or, you know, they're writing it because they just are attracted to the dynamics, and it has nothing to do with anything other than that. Like, I just have to believe that that's true, and I think that all these qualifiers sometimes get in the way, right? They just exist to cast judgments more than anything else. And, I mean, that's, you know, that's a huge epic conversation. I know there's lots of different feelings and opinions on that. To the people who are listening, who are kind of not casting that judgment, but who are kind of thinking, oh, like, this whole conversation is just, why do people have to redeem villains at all? I don't see the appeal. You know, I just want to read about cinnamon rolls, and I just want to read fluff, and I don't get it. And why would you ever want to redeem a character who has done something mean to the heroes? What is the appeal? Why do you think it's important to allow those kinds of explorations within fandom?
It comes down to sort of allowing everyone to like what they like. Like, back to our typical mantra of your kink is not my kink, and that's okay. It's, we all have our own preferences. We all have our own things that we want to read or want to see, like dark AUs or BDSM or cinnamon rolls or whatever, you know, and it's fine. It's, if you don't understand it, that's okay. Just don't put somebody else down because you can't understand why they like that thing. It's silly to. We're all here together. We're all trying to enjoy these things. You know, don't fight with each other.
And Lita, what about you? Why do you think it's important?
Well, I think, for me, the kind of stuff I like to see in villain fics and stories about villains is really the deep questions of character and morality and motivation and kind of what does it mean to be good and to be evil, and that kind of meaty character exploration is what I'm really interested in, and that's what I think you can get more in fic that's about villains, or as opposed to in fluff, like domestic fluff, where there's not really that conflict so much, which is kind of like why we say the same thing when people are like, oh, I would watch an entire movie about Steve and Bucky, like, being boyfriends and moving in together and living happily ever after. It's like, well, yeah, there's a reason they're not going to make that movie, and it's that there's no conflict in it. So, it, you know, I think we get a lot of the conflict in the canon, And a lot of fans, you know, they get enough conflict in the canon and they're like, okay, that was great. Now I want to see that the happy, fluffy stuff, which is fine, which is totally fine. So if that's what you want to do, you know, you do what you want to do. But I think that the conflicts are what really draws my attention and what I like to read about.
It's the fun of those characters that have that moral gray area, mm-hmm. because you can sort of explore the bad things and like the rape or the domestic abuse or things like that. You can think about it and explore it and have fun with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even tie it back to real life. And, you know, you evaluate, oh, well, this villain, could they be redeemed? And then, you know, maybe evaluate your own feelings about how you feel about ex-cons or people who have gotten out of prison. Like, have they been redeemed? Are they good people? What does that even mean? So I think there is application to real life of, you know, our own policies towards the death penalty and things like that are all kind of related to this. What does it mean to be good or bad? And can you change from one to the other?
And what kind of capacity for forgiveness do people potentially have? And what are the limits of that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's another interesting question that you get with a villain.
Right. And can you
take?
Yeah. And can you love somebody without forgiving them? Which is another one, because I'm so interested in these kind of power dynamic shifts where one person has been the bad person taking advantage of the good person. And in my favorite dynamic there, the good person still loves the bad person, even though they're doing bad stuff, even though they know they're bad. And they're not going to forgive them, but they love them anyway. And I think that's really interesting to think about our capacity for having those feelings.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that that's actually a really great defense of that kind of fic. I think you're right. I think there's elements of that that you do definitely take into some self-exploration, right? And take into how you think about the characters. So I'm going to have us move on, and we're going to end on some fic recs. We have all brought our best villainous, trashy, problematic fave fic recs today. Z, we'll start with you. What's your fic rec today?
Mine is a Harry Potter fic. It's called All Our Secrets Laid Bare by Fire the Sound. It's not necessarily one of those dark sort of stories, but I just think it's fun because it's... It takes place several years after Hogwarts, and so Harry and Draco are both sort of existing in their careers and whatnot, and they're brought together in a situation that neither one of them really enjoys, and they're forced to work together, and so their relationship changes and the dynamic changes, and it just slowly turns into a relationship, which I adore, and it's complete 16 chapters, so it's a good read.
Okay, perfect. So any Harry Potter fans out there, that would be an interesting one. And Lita, what is your fic rec?
My fic rec is a Teen Wolf fic. It's called Smile, Everything Will Be Fine by Tylete, who is also known as Wild Hack and is my favorite fanfic author. And this fic is a Kate and Derek fic. It's from Kate's point of view, covering the events, the pre-canon events of her seducing him and killing his family, basically. But it's all from her point of view, which I think is what makes it really interesting. And I will also add that this same author has written some Hannibal fanfic, which is also excellent. And as any Hannibal fan knows, there is quite a lot of villainy and things like that in Hannibal.
Yes, we didn't get a chance really to talk at all about Hannibal in this episode, which makes me kind of sad, but I'm not in that fandom. But I know there's going to be some Hannibal fans out there who are like, oh, you talked for an hour about villains in fandom, and you really didn't bring up Hannibal, and that is a shame.
You mentioned him.
I did.
See, I'm not but in Hannibal fandom either, so I would have had nothing to contribute to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, there are a lot of fanfics in Hannibal fandom that are the fluffy AUs. Those do certainly exist. And then there's also the ones that are like, Will and Hannibal go and murder people together. kind of ones. So
yeah. So I have a fic rec as well. And this one is actually really interesting because I've been hanging on to it because I could also have definitely used it for any show that we do in the future on consent or female characters and how they're treated or many other things. It's amazing. It's called Those Sinned Against by one of my favorite writers, Arcada. It is a Marvel fic It is an alternate universe, like a canon divergence, essentially, where Thor and Loki and the Asgardians invade Earth at an earlier point. So Thor doesn't come to Earth. It's very dark Thor in it, because it is essentially about the Asgardians as plunderers, as warriors. Thor and Loki come to Earth and basically slaughter absolutely everybody solely because, you know, Thor wants to prove to Odin that he can take on Jotunheim type of a thing, right? So they just treat Earth like their playground, and it's tagged as War Prize Tony, which tells you the dynamic between him and Loki in the fic.
I'm excited already.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that Loki kind of stands in contrast to how dark they make Thor, which sometimes happens in villain fic. If you make a good character way more evil than the villain, then the villain doesn't seem quite so evil anymore. It is a fic about the Asgardians take Tony essentially hostage along with Natasha, and Tony wants to get in and have a look at their weaponry and their force fields and then get out. And so he kind of ends up in a relationship where he gets given to Loki by Thor as a war prize, and there is some sex involved, and there is a kind of a slow burn relationship. What I really love about it is that it is definitely non-consenting in the beginning. Loki is really pretty unredeemably still Loki, but at the same time later, when it becomes a real relationship, there are acknowledgments of the lack of consent in the beginning, and there are acknowledgments on both sides of how messed up that relationship is. Lita, you mentioned power dynamics, right? Here, Loki is, you know, got Tony captive, and Tony wants something from him. Tony is using Loki just as much as Loki is using him. And it's actually also weirdly really kind to Pepper, which sounds strange, but it treats the character of Pepper Potts and her place in Tony's life probably as respectfully and worshipfully and you know, towards canon as I've ever really read in a Marvel fic, which is bizarre given the context of it. But it's really entertaining. And I love fics that let Loki be Loki, basically. So my headcanon of him is sort of chaotic neutral. He'll kill someone as soon as look at him, but he won't do it for, you know, without a reason, without a plan behind it, without they've pissed him off. Like, he's not just going to randomly do it. It's usually pretty calculated. So that's my fic rec. So that is our villains show. Thank you again to Lita and Z for joining me, and thanks to you for listening. Once again, a quick reminder to check out our website and our Tumblr at theotpodcast.com, or you can join us on Twitter, where we are at theotpodcast, and tweet about the show using the hashtag theotpodcast. Your word of mouth and support is really how we're able to continue to grow the audience for the show and keep generating the important fandom conversations that we like to have. So if you can, tell your fandom friends about the show, review it on iTunes, subscribe or follow us on social media. All of that really does help. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thanks to everyone in the last couple of weeks who shared ABO fic recs with us. We're going to put those up in a collection, and you'll be able to find them, as well as all of our in-show fic recs on our AO3 page, where we are at @the_OTP. And we're also going to be sharing fic recs and content related to villains this week, and keep that conversation from the episode going on our Tumblr and our Twitter. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks, always, to Peter Chakowski for our theme song and our logo. And finally, this week's conversation really was an important reminder that your kink is not my kink, and that's okay.